I have been so lucky to listen to you. Before I came, I heard recordings, and of course, with John Legend and doing the Bridge Over Troubled Water and Waste Time and some of these beautiful things. I'm curious, how did you find your voice?
You know, I've been singing since I was 2 years old, and as my mother and my grandmother, whom I lovingly call Big Mama, would tell me that I sang before I spoke, which I think most children probably do, but I've been singing for a very long time, and I think that my voice is a combination of all of the environments that I grew up around, all the musics that I heard and participated in, and so I often tell people that my voice is just, it's what lives in here. It's something that I feel in my spirit and in my soul, and that I hope radiates from my heart outwards to everyone. Whether it's a rehearsal or a recording or a performance, I want people to know that everything that comes from me is coming from the center of my joy, which is my heart space.
All right, then. I'm just so astonished by, you know, the sound of your voice is your own sound, and it is truly a heart sound. And I hear it in the pop music you sing, but I also hear it in this beautiful Idaspe.
It's so gorgeous, and yes, you're right. You know, I always tell people, I was talking with Claire, our director of the show, who's got a wonderful concept of this, that if it's not fun for me and if it doesn't bring me joy, I won't do it. So it has to come from the heart space. And yes, it is in all other music that I sing. If I can't have that, I don't want any part of it. But certainly in Idaspe, there's so much wonderful music that Broski has written, especially for my character, but all of everybody's character, to be honest with you. But there's so much of love, and especially in this aria that I'm singing for you today, the O Bella Mano, it's so beautiful. And it's where my character, Idaspe, is disguised as Acrone, but he has the hand of the beautiful, beautiful, gorgeous Berenice, who's asleep. And he's trying to tell her in his own way, even though she's sleeping, that he is her long-lost lover who she thinks is dead, but he's really not dead. He's just disguising himself. So all this music is absolutely stunning.
It really is. And watching you perform it as in the recording aspect, I loved watching how your body, your hands, everything's helped you with the vocalism.
Oh, totally. I believe that singing is a whole body exercise. And whenever I talk to my students about that, I'm always telling them, use your body. Of course, you can't do that in real performance often. You know, you have to sometimes stand still. But you are, if you're lucky, you have a director who enables you and allows you to walk around the room and to feel the fullness of the characterization and the music. Because you cannot sing any music, in my opinion. It specifically happens even when I'm singing Handel. And I think of specifically the Messiah. Whenever I'm doing the Messiah, you know, you're supposed to just sit there and, you know, be all buttoned up. When anybody is singing in the Messiah, I move. And when I sing, I move, because you cannot feel the music. I get little goosebumps right now. So whenever I'm singing this music, yes, it does help me to move, because it makes me feel the music more totally. It makes me encompass the character more fully. And it makes John, the person, fall more in love with the character that I am, because in truth, I'm Idaspe, not John, when I'm on stage.
Well, that makes perfect sense. But tell me about the character of Idaspe. What is the arc like?
The arc is really incredible, because Idaspe is a fighter. He is mostly, though, a lover. And when we were talking through the conception of this, I think I had different ideas about who I thought Idaspe was. Idaspe is certainly a leader, but more than anything, he is aiming for the love and fighting for the love of Berenice, who is captured and is being held hostage by Artaserse. And I found within the last 3 days, I was like, you know, really, Idaspe is fighting for his love and his honor. And he's a part of the Medes faction of this this group that we have that's kind of split. Artaceres is on one side, and Hidaspe and Dario are on the other side. But Hidaspe is a lover, and he's inquisitive because he does also want to lead. So he's always taking information and gathering information from everyone and everything. But what I find more than anything is that there is this desire within Hidaspe to really conquer the heart of all people, but certainly have the heart of his lover Berenice and to defend his honor.
When you approach a role like this and something that really has not ever been done before, how do you put that into your voice? How do you make it become alive?
I think that we're lucky in this situation that we have somebody like Claire who is leading us, and we have Daniel and the entire Quantum Theater orchestra that's here, but particularly the Continuo who have been along with us since the beginning of rehearsals, that we have really been developing this very much so akin to theater, straight theater, that you come into this normally where you're memorized, which we mostly are, but with this, because it has not been done in a time where there's a recording of it, you know, it's so obscure that we get to put our own stamp on it. So coming into this process, I'm really pleased that we get to develop it and make it our own. So yes, it's a part of my body and I put it into my body, but the rehearsal process is a part of that process too, where I get to embody it more and take it in more and feel it more and feel it with my colleagues more when they are on stage with me. So it's been an interesting process of becoming more of who I think Hidaspe is. And then, as I said, turning the coin, flipping the coin, and letting Hidaspe tell me who he is. So it's fantastic. So just continuously rehearsing it, practicing it, and having the joy of being with the Continuo. Because you don't always have that, even at the Met. You usually just have the harpsichord or the piano. But here we have the entire Continuo section, which is, in fact, very instrumental for us to sing.
Describe the Continuo for our listeners so that they know, they can understand a little bit more what you're working with.
Well, we have a theorbo player, we have a harpsichordist, we have the violin here, the first violin, the cello, I'm trying to think who else. We have the conductor. I feel like I'm missing somebody.
Viola da gamba.
Viola da gamba. There you go. Mm-hmm. And you know, you have all these instrumentalists who are here as a part of the Continuo. The Continuo typically is with us throughout every recitative, and we call them recitativi because that's plural for recitativo. And the recitatives are where the story really gets meaty. It's where you hear all of the informational aspects of the development of the story. And the Continuo helps us, as it sounds like in English, as a cognate, it continues the movement of the story. Mm-hmm. And it helps us as the singer to continue to develop the story all the way through. A through line. How about that? That makes sense.
It does. Yeah. It totally makes sense. It's exciting that you, as John Holliday, you are a star in...
Yes,
you are.
You are.
Okay.
But there is a very interesting aspect to that, because I was talking to someone who says, oh, I don't know opera, but I'm going to come see this because of John Holliday.
Oh, wow. That makes me so happy. Yes. I mean, it really does. I could cry because one of the things that's been so important to me as just a human being, who opera chose me. I wouldn't say that I chose it. Opera chose me. I was just around it, you know, as a little boy. I never heard it in my household ever. And if you go to my house today, you would not hear it unless my family is playing me. In my home, I listen to it, of course, because I sing opera too. But one of the biggest, I don't know if I would say responsibilities, or maybe it's one of the duties that I feel in my life, which I guess it's a synonym for responsibility, is that I want to help bridge the gap between the communities of pop, jazz, gospel, R&B, and classical music, because I am a part of that. In my life growing up, that's what I heard, R&B, you know, soul music, gospel certainly. I play gospel organ and piano, and I sing in gospel choirs. And so for someone to say that they are coming to the show because I'm in it means so much more to me than I could ever even express, because that's been one of my goals in my life, is to just bridge the gap between people from different ethnicities, cultures, and loves of music, because music is music is music. It's like, you know, what's his name, the guy that wrote Lin-Manuel Miranda said, love is love is love. Music is music is music. And in music is love. And it's one of the ways in which I believe God has given me the ability to share my gift. I believe that God made me to be an instrument of peace, of love, and of joy. And so when I can do that, that makes me excited.
Well, that is just perfect. I think you said you were singing since you were 2 years old. How did you discover? Gospel probably being one of the first, and jazz. How did you discover that your voice could fit into opera?
You know, I don't know. I just did it. Okay. You know, that's kind of my thing. It's like, you know, I was in a boys' choir, and the boys' choir, there was lots of classical music, and I remember seeing Denise Graves on stage. We were doing... No. Oh. It was Damnation of Faust. And I think it's by Berlioz.
Yes.
And I was like, oh my gosh, Denise is singing. I had never seen an African-American singer as an adult, you know, singing as a kid. You know, I'm a kid singing in African America. I'm like, okay, well, I can do this because she's doing it. And then, you know, you fast forward to meeting Denise and being with her, then having her to come to the university where I teach to do a master class and a recital. And then fast forward to that immediately following Idaspe, the next day I travel in the morning to New York City to begin working on the hours at the Metropolitan Opera, in which Denise Graves will be in the cast with me. So just having a full circle, but opera certainly chose me. I didn't know. And then I started to win awards in high school, the number one singer in the state of Texas for 2 years in a row, first chair in the TMEA All-State, number one in solo and ensemble. And I thought, okay, maybe I can do this. Then going to college and saying, I'll try it. I didn't even know what vocal performance was. I just knew that I was a singer. And I like to argue too sometimes. It's my Aries spirit, so I thought maybe I'll be a lawyer. Certainly knew I'd always be a teacher because I come from a family of teachers. But, you know, when I started winning awards, I thought maybe I can do this. So that's kind of how it happened.
But also, you are teaching.
I am. I'm an associate professor of music voice at the Conservatory of Music at Lawrence University in Appleton, Wisconsin.
Oh, you're kidding. Tenured and everything?
I am. One of the youngest professors there, and I think one of the only African-American men on faculty that's tenured.
Yeah. I'm going to say, aren't you about 12 years old?
I'm 16.
Okay. Well, you, I figured, because definitely. Well, it is a joy to hear you sing. It is a joy to speak with you. Thank you so much. We're so lucky to have you here in Pittsburgh. And the fact that you're going to the Metropolitan Opera right after this and performing with Denise Graves, well, Quantum Theater, I'm so glad. So glad. And such an amazing cast, all of your castmates.
They are fantastic. And if I got this colloquial term down right, I'm gonna say it. I can't wait to be with Jens.
Jens, right. Jens are right. Jens are right.
Jens is like y'all, right?
Yes.
Got it.
Yep.
Can't wait to see Jens at the concert
and at the opera.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, John.